You're listening to an edited version of the live Voices of Montana statewide radio program. Find us on Facebook and subscribe for further podcasts wherever you get your audio on demand. I'm Tom Schultz, host of the program. Thanks for joining us, and please feel free to contact me at studio@voicesofmontana.com.
You know, when people say it comes at a hefty price tag, you always wonder, okay, what's hefty? How much is hefty? Hundreds of jobs and literally millions of dollars to local governments. We try to put a figure on that, but it's more than just that, too. As we look at the abrupt cancellation of the Keystone XL pipeline, what does that mean for Montana's energy independence? How do you keep moving that ball forward? We need to continue talking about that. Steve Daines, Senator Steve Daines, is going to join us tomorrow. At least he's set up to do that, and we'll continue this discussion. But let's get Alan Olson on the air here, Executive Director of the Montana Petroleum Association, a former state senator and former member of the Montana House of Representatives, too. Hey, Alan, how you doing?
I'm good, Tom. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for being here. Short segment. We're going to be hitting that 9:35 break. But what was your initial reaction? What was the industry's initial reaction? I think they anticipated it to a certain degree, but it's still a gut punch.
Well, I tell you what, Tom. It is something that we anticipated. I mean, when you looked at all the rhetoric coming out of the last election cycle. There is a strong movement in the progressive caucus of the Democrat Party to essentially shut down our industry.
But that doesn't come as a surprise. The big question is then how do you move the ball forward with that kind of pretty strong opposition?
Well, Tom, it's going to be a little bit of an uphill battle. That's for sure. I think we should be able to get our point through to the Biden administration. Energy independence is important for the United States. Here, I believe it was last month, is the first time in years we haven't imported any crude oil from Saudi Arabia. We have been exporting crude oil. Business hasn't been that bad, I mean, except for everything that's come down under the COVID pandemic.
Right.
But when you shut off opportunity, one of two things happen. Either we're going to go back to importing a tremendous amount of oil from overseas, or oil prices are going to go up. And, I mean, that's not necessarily a bad thing for us either. But, you know, the Canadians are good allies. It's a safe place to get crude oil from. Canada is our largest trading partner. And, you know, it's just too bad that they followed through on this. The border crossing has been constructed.
And that's what we'll have to talk about when we come on back. You know, the goalposts continuously moving on this issue. Back with Alan Olson here on Voices.
Voices of Montana continues right after this.
The fastest hour in Montana radio continues. Call 1-866-627-5483 and join Montana's statewide radio talk show, Voices of Montana, with Tom Schultz.
From the laboratories to the engineers to the folks working on the rigs, the oil industry is real important to not just our economy, but we think about all the things that come out of petroleum, and plastics are one of them. I know some people have problem with plastics, but they're needed in a lot of applications. Your cell phones, tires, I mean, that list goes on and on. But the average income, more than two-thirds higher than the state average for folks working in the petroleum industry, and total income paid to Montana households, $2.3 billion on an annual basis. That's a lot of money. And to just kind of sign a document and say all those 29,000-30,000 jobs in Montana are gone. All that money doesn't mean anything. There's things to consider, all right? And so we're talking about the Keystone XL pipeline here on Voices of Montana, that abrupt cancellation of the project, hundreds of jobs in the state, and literally millions of dollars. Alan Olson is with us, Executive Director of the Montana Petroleum Association. Again, Alan, I appreciate you being here. I was looking to, and TC Energy, which is the company behind the Keystone XL pipeline, you know, they made a statement and obviously getting out there and doing a bunch of public interviews regarding this is maybe not in their best interest, but I wanted to talk to them about the investment, because when we did open phones on this on Thursday, there were landowners who called and said, I've been in negotiations and we've come to an agreement with Keystone on my land, and it's been a process that lasted 5, 8, 10 years. And you go back to 2008, I think, when this pipeline first began being proposed, that's a real difficult challenge to overcome when you're looking at the profitability of a project and it's 13 years in the making before you can even really begin. And then as you begin in earnest, it's canceled.
Well, and Tom, you're right. I mean, the permitting process started in 2008. It was a four-year process of environmental review to permit Keystone, the Montana section. It went through the Major Facility Siting Act. Every possible environmental issue that came up was addressed in the permitting process, and the permit was issued in 2012. From that point on, it's just been one obstacle after another. I mean, when you look at the investment that TC Energy was going to make, not just in Montana, but South Dakota and Nebraska as well, millions of dollars. One of the major contractors on this pipeline construction is a Montana-based pipeline company based out of Bozeman. But it also affected little companies like Lakeside Excavation up there in Havre. Those guys, I think they employ like 7-8 people. They were brought in as a subcontractor. So this is going to cost jobs all across Montana.
There are some things to consider, though. I've been kind of going back and forth with an audience member about what this will do for oil refineries in our local area, as this light crude from the Bakken will continue to be supplied to these refineries. Can you give us sort of an overall? And then another texter had commented about this is going to help rail transportation, but ag folks would go, well, that's going to create some difficulties for us when we need to move our grain. Give us that step back and give us that 10,000-foot view of just those two things specifically, rail transportation regarding this and then oil refineries in Montana.
That oil is going to get to market one way or another. We like pipelines. It's a little more economical than shipping on the rail. But there's also another pipeline being built up in Canada that'll take that oil to the West Coast over off British Columbia, primarily export to China.
Yeah.
Keystone would not bring any additional oil into the Montana refineries. You know, there again, just about all of the crude pipelines run north and south. Keystone's going to cut diagonally across from north of Malta down into the Baker area. But about 98% of the crude oil that we refine at the four refineries in Montana does come out of Canada. You know, there again, it's a secure trading partner. The light Bakken crude, that goes east and it goes south. Quite a bit of it that goes south does go to export markets. We need to have reliable trading partners when it comes to energy security in the U.S., and this would give us a tremendous leg up on energy security. We're no longer importing crude oil out of Venezuela. There's crude oil imports that come in out of West Africa. That's not very secure, and everybody knows what the Middle East is like. That could be shut off in a heartbeat. But as long as we have a stable trading partner to get needed crude oil from, on top of the crude oil that we're already producing in the U.S., we need that for national security.
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge part of the discussion here. I'd also talked to a listener who had said that we're going to, if we don't process this tar sands crude, we may have to end up importing it ourselves, because there are specific products, and I think he mentioned tires, that are made from the heavier crude. So, is that true?
Well, yeah, there's a tremendous number of products that are made from the crude. And I mean, even the Montana refineries, they are set up to refine heavy crude, because that's what we have access for. A lot of the refineries on the Gulf Coast are set up to refine heavy crude. When you look at the crude oil that come out of Venezuela, Mexico, that's all heavy. Our whole transportation sector runs on crude oil.
Yeah.
All of those Tesla cars are shipped out on the back of a diesel truck or behind a diesel locomotive.
Yeah, and there's a here's a text message, too, out of Terry. Thank you for joining us here, 781-627-5483. And I think this is a typo, but without, I'm going to add, without oil, how are we to feed the USA? Talk about, you know, how much agriculture relies on this product.
Well, Senator Tester even brought that up in an interview here a while back, that his tractors run on diesel fuel, not batteries. But, you know, Tom, eventually we're going to get to electric fleets, but that's not here today. And I really doubt we're going to see mass-scale electric vehicles in my lifetime.
Yeah.
We still have to rely on hydrocarbons to run the economy in this country.
Well, we've always talked about a transition to this next energy economy, and it just, I don't think it exists without some use of these kinds of products. Alan Olson is with us, a former state senator, former member of the House of Representatives as well. You look at some of those committees he served on, it's energy and telecommunications, also former environmental field tech for the Montana Department of Natural Resources and Conservation here on Voices of Montana. Will a lawsuit from Canada be able to maybe move the ball or change the scenario here a little bit? A lawsuit and the threat of strained relations with Canada, could it change this determination so far?
Well, you know, Tom, I'm always hesitant to try and forecast any kind of litigation that's coming up. But, I mean, I think anything's possible. You know, there again, when you look at the impacts for the state of Montana, about $9 million in property tax a year, the jobs that are involved in this, you know, it's kind of amazing. I can listen to President Biden, and he wants to talk about tax dollars going into infrastructure to put people to work. Here we've got private dollars going into infrastructure to put people to work, and they just can't seem to grasp that. Government doesn't create jobs. Private industry creates jobs, and here is a job creator that'll put a tremendous number of people to work.
Yeah, and I guess this is just a comment, but I think some of our policymakers, they believe, when you've heard them say it, well, just print more money. And this theory of economics that it grows on trees, that don't worry about it, how much we spend, we'll just print more money. But printing money is not what leads to wealth. I think it's production that leads to wealth.
Tom, it's that production that's going to have to pay the taxes to pay back all the money that the government has borrowed.
How bad will this hurt production?
Anytime we can get increased pipeline capacity, it helps with production. And when it helps with production, our guys will make a little bit more money per barrel of oil. And when our guys make more money, the royalty owners make more money. When the royalty owners and our people make more money, the government makes more money. You know, that's just the cycle. Government cannot continue to say we're going to put people to work without industry, without private dollars going into infrastructure.
Keystone XL.
That money all has to be paid back.
It would cross 285 miles. Well, yeah, that I would think that money has to be paid back, but there are other scenarios out there that are even worse than having to pay that money back. But that's not where we're going right here. But Keystone XL pipeline would have crossed 285 miles of Montana, Phillips Valley, Macomb, Dawson Prairie, and Fallon counties, as you mentioned, about $9 million in property taxes on an annual basis for, I think I read somewhere, for Macomb County. Just the Keystone XL pipeline itself would have doubled their property taxes. That's a lot of money for local counties. Maybe they were counting on that. I think most county officials don't count their chickens before they hatch. But I do want to come back and look at these moving goalposts, Alan, and if there is going to be movement in the courts that could support this, what TC Energy thought was a done process. So we're back with more. Alan Olson is with us, Executive Director of the Montana Petroleum Association, as we look up at the fallout of the cancellation of Keystone XL here on Voices. Learned about this last week. We're going to talk about it tomorrow on the program. There's something called the Yellowstone Short Line Trail that has received a generous donation from some folks. And so what this is, basically, is you take an old rail line that has been abandoned, long abandoned, and you get in there and you kind of fix it up, and it becomes a really cool bike trail. I've seen that and I've been on it in the Hiawatha over there in far western Montana and on the Idaho Pass, and it's really cool. So we're going to talk about this tomorrow. We also may have Senator Steve Daines on the air to continue the conversation regarding this. And I'll ask him this question as I pose it to you, Alan Olson, our executive director of the Montana Petroleum Association, a guest today here on Voices. This was wiped away with the stroke of a pen, an executive order. Is there legislation out there that can make this resistant to something like that?
There has been some discussion coming led by Senator Daines that they could be looking at some potential legislation at the federal level to maybe overturn this executive order. And we would be definitely looking forward to a move like that. Like I said, Tom, this pipeline has been through more environmental review than probably any other project in the country. And it is just such a disappointment that on his first day in office, that President Biden, with the flare of his pen, would revoke it. How many other projects are going to get shut down by executive order when they've been through these various permitting processes ad nauseum?
Right. Yeah, that's just not fair. And I saw a headline out there. I didn't read the full story because it just talked about this decision creates 48 million tons of scrap. And I thought, wow, that's you're putting lipstick on a pig there. How long before the oil industry kind of moves on from this? There's pipelines all over the place and businesses that have been hired and hired folks regarding this. How long will it be they kind of remain in limbo while this sort of plays itself out?
That's all going to depend on the Biden administration, what they decide to do. I mean, there has been a lot of materials that have been purchased for this pipeline. It's stockpiled. There are numbers of small companies that have geared up to do this, buying equipment, getting everything lined out. They're going to be stuck holding the bag. And, you know, there again, when you go through 4 years of permitting and 10 years after that, and this is what happens. I mean, I think it kind of takes away a lot of the hope that we're going to be able to make things work in this country.
Yeah, I know. I call that a gut punch. MontanaPetroleum.org for more information. Alan Olson, executive director of that organization, will continue to move forward. Alan, thanks for your time. Be well.
Thanks, Tom.
You've been listening to Voices of Montana. Comments and opinions heard are those of the host or callers and not necessarily those of this station, sponsors, or Northern News Network. Join us Monday through Friday at 9:06 for Voices of Montana.